Welcome to another brand new episode of Take a Shelfie, the podcast about bottle shops and the pints and people you find therein. I'm Jeff Martin, and with me as always is a man who put on a crocodile mask and sung for 12 weeks straight, only to be revealed to be a member of the Backstreet Boys, Matt Prince.
You know, I don't watch that show, but I'm always mesmerized by the idea of it, and I feel like I would really like it. I just have never watched.
I also don't watch The Masked Singer, but I do spend a considerable amount of time on Twitter, and I don't know, 6 weeks ago or something, somebody said, the crocodile is obviously Nick Carter. And I was like, well, you know, everyone makes their wild guesses or whatever. But then I went on YouTube and watched a video of the crocodile singing. I think it was Don't Want to Miss a Thing. And I said, oh, that's clearly Nick Carter.
I don't know if it's sad that Nick Carter is doing that show or really cool that he's doing that show.
I think in 2020, like, no one's touring, no one's putting an album out. So you might as well go do the, but the greatest injustice of all is that Nick Carter did not win The Masked Singer. It was Leanne Rimes won.
Oh, Leanne Rimes. Yeah, all right.
Also doing The Masked Singer.
Yeah. There's another person. I'm like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? But I guess, you know, at this point in both of their careers, it's a fun thing to do. They get themselves some, publicity, and you know, they humble themselves to their fans, so that's pretty cool.
This is now officially a podcast about reality shows that neither of us watches, man.
Yeah, I don't think that would last very long, Jeff.
All right, well then let's talk about beer. What are you drinking here, Matt?
So I'm actually drinking it's called First Drop. It's an American pale ale from Upper Pass Beer Company in Vermont. They are a nano brewery, and they kind of work in two ways with what we're talking about today, Jeff. First of all, Happy New Year. So let's get that out of the way. We have rid ourselves of 2020, and we are now into 2021, which will hopefully be a better year for everyone. It looks like it's going to be, because it can't get much worse than 2020, but you know, I guess time will tell. So I actually texted you the other day and I said, you know, what more fitting a way to break into the new year than by doing a New Year's resolution episode, Jeff, where we talk about our own New Year's resolutions when it comes to beer, of course, and also maybe predict/shout into the universe with the hopes of happening some trends that we think might come about or want to come about. I will tell you why this ties in later. My beer ties in later, but until then, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Dare to Know, the IPA made with Strata hops from Three's Brewing up in Queens. Right before the holiday break, I ordered, four packs of various beers from Three's to be mailed to me. And I think this is the very last of those beers.
Oh, well, mazel tov, you made it through. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so now I have, you know, now I have some empty shelf space that I can maybe dedicate to something that's related to a brew year's resolution.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. So Jeff, let's start with those brew year's resolutions, as you just put it. I like that. I like that. I wish I would have come up with it myself. You know, as I head into the year, I of course think about things that I want to accomplish that are a little bit more substantial than beer related things. But for the sake of this, you know, I kind of jotted some ideas down, and you know, after not being able to really go out and do things and be part of the culture of beer, you know, in person for the past 10 months or whatever, my first one is visit as many breweries as possible. You know, hopefully the vaccine rolls out and hopefully we can start to get back to normal. And I want to go see the brewers. I want to go see the spaces. I want to be amongst the other beer drinkers. So that's my number one brew year's resolution. How about you, Jeff?
That's a great one. I'll agree with it. I don't know if it's my number one, but my number one is sort of generically try as many new beers for the first time as possible. You know, the year 2020 sort of, and lockdown sort of forced us to buy beer in larger quantities than you could typically get if you were visiting a brewery every weekend, every couple of weeks. So I wound up with a lot of four packs, a lot of six packs this year, where typically in a year where I can just go to the bottle shop whatever day I want, would buy one or two cans. And so I want to try to go get back to that one or two cans of a beer and move on from it. So I want to try as many new beers as possible.
You know, Jeff, I had something very similar on my list. I had drink from more breweries I'm unfamiliar with. You know, very much like what you just said. I want to, if I see a brewery on the shelf at a bottle shop that I've never heard of, I'm going to try them out, because that's what this is all about. This, you know, if we're getting a brewery at our bottle shop, they've done something right enough that their beer is being distributed and it's being picked up by a pretty, you know, well-known bottle shop. So I think that that's something that's very exciting. I've already done that in this early, you know, new year, stopping in bottle shops, grabbed something from, I think it's called Falling Knife Brewery, which I never heard of before, never seen on the bottle shop. I'm going to make sure that's what it's called, because I don't want to misname them. It is Falling Knife Brewing Company. It is out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and they were named, I think, by a local magazine, the best new brewery in Minneapolis. So cool. So I got a double IPA from them called L Bombs that I'm excited to try. And, you know, there's a couple others, like a Pilsner from Schilling Brewing Company, which I had heard great things about in terms of their European inspired beers and their lagers. So I'm pretty excited to try that out as well.
Another one, Matt, that I have, if you want to try more breweries, I want to try more styles. I want to be a little more open-minded to new styles in the new year. I think it's clear to anyone who's listened to the podcast that I'm a little bit dismissive of the sours. I'm a little bit dismissive of the milkshakes. But, you know, I want to give them a chance. If someone has made one and it gets to the point where it's in a can, you know, they're proud of it. So, you know, I want to see what they see in it. I can't promise that I'll sing its praises, or even that, like, it'll be something that I write down a recipe and you know, try to make on my own, or try to find something similar to it. But I'll be more open-minded to the style.
I love that, Jeff, because there is a certain style that we very rarely talk about that I pretty much most of the time refuse to drink, and that's a Hefeweizen. I just don't understand the style, the notes of clove and banana. I don't know. It's just not for me, but I feel like there are some great ones out there, and I should try more of them, and I should enjoy that style. Even if it doesn't become a favorite style of mine, even if it's something I try a few times and then I say, okay, I did it. I feel like that's something that I should give another chance. Give the Hefeweizen another chance.
Well, I have good news for you, Matt, because that ties into another resolution that I have, and I make it every year, and I have varying degrees of success with it, but I want to try to flip the ratio of beer I drink homebrew versus store-bought. And I know that that might go in contrast to some of the resolutions I've already mentioned, but I want to try to get to a point where I'm drinking, you know, 80% beer that I made and 20% beer that I bought. And I think during, really even just during the holiday break, I've sort of dialed in my process where I can make 2.5 gallons of beer versus, you know, a typical homebrew batch is 5 gallons, which is 2 cases of beer, which it takes a lot to get through that. But I can make 2.5 gallons and share it with some people, and then it's quicker turnover. And the reason that that's good news for you, Matt, is I have a Hefeweizen on tap right now.
Nice. Well, then my first one will be a Third Mortgage Hefeweizen as I start my journey to appreciating that style. That's the best news, Jeff. So I'm pretty excited about that.
I'll bottle you off a bomber before. It's technically a beer for my sister who wanted a blood orange wheat beer with some clove flavors. I said, well, that sounds like Hefeweizen. Yeah. So I brewed it up, but, you know, I brewed 5 gallons of it, and I told her I'm going to bottle off some and keep it and then give you the rest. So you'll get one of the bottles.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeff. You know, I'm pretty envious of you, Jeff, because when I think about, you know, my bottle shop experiences, you know, I'm at the mercy of what is there. If you want a style of beer, you just brew it. And then, you know, a few weeks later, you're enjoying. I mean, I know that you haven't brewed every style yet. I know that you're on your way there, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean it's not so much instant gratification because, like you said, there is a moment where you have to make the beer and then wait a couple weeks, unless you're fermenting with kvike, the Norwegian yeast, and then you can probably make a beer on a Sunday and be drinking it by Saturday
Right.
if you do your temperature control and you force carbonate it just right. You could probably be drinking it quickly, but a Hefeweizen takes a little while. The Pilsner, which is my favorite style to drink and make, take a little longer. But yeah, it's not instant gratification, but you can get to a style that maybe isn't available in the bottle shop regularly, and maybe you can smash together some styles that the beer world hasn't thought of. So
Yeah.
let's pivot on that and talk about things we want the beer world to think of in the new year, Matt. What are some things that you hope to see from the beer world?
So, Jeff, one of the reasons why I decided to drink this beer today, it's an American Pale Ale, is because I would like more breweries to go back to that, to brewing pale ales versus the more popular Indian Pale Ale. I think that, we've talked to enough brewers on this show and we've talked to enough brewers in person and people in the beer industry in person that we know that a lot of those stories of how they got into craft beer starts with Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. It's a pale ale. It's a dialed back, sessionable beer. It doesn't have the same hop schedule than IPA would. It's not as in your face with those flavors, but they're subtle. And even though they're simple, there's a complexity to them because I'd imagine there's a very thin line between pale ale and IPA. And to make sure you get to the top of the pale ale flavor spectrum without going over to the IPA, I'd imagine it's very tough. But there are some great ones. I mean, I think about Tired Hands. I think about Hop Hands, which is kind of like the base for all of their hoppier beers. It's such a simple but like wonderful beer that every time I drink it, I'm like, how did they do this? How did they find a way to give it this body, this flavor, but keep it in the pale ale spectrum? Daisy Cutter is another one. Seeing how Half Acre, that's their flagship, is Daisy Cutter. And Daisy Cutter has always been listed among great pale ales. And the last one I was thinking of is Toppling Goliath. They have their pseudo Sue. Everyone's excited about King Sue. It's one of the top rated double IPAs in the market, but pseudo Sue is their flagship. So I'm really challenging, hoping more breweries dial it back to a pale ale. This is fantastic. This is what I'm talking about. This isn't bright yellow. It's not orange juice. It is hazy, but it's a nice balance. It's got a nice bitterness on the end. It's still juicy. It's still fruity, but it's not like overpowering. And let's be real, it's low alcohol. It's 5.9, which is higher on the higher end for a pale ale. But this is what I'm looking for, more breweries to embrace the pale ale.
I'll mention two more pale ales for you. One is Yards Philly Pale Ale, which
Oh,
we've talked
yeah.
about a ton of times. It's a perfect beer. It executes everything it wants to do perfectly. And the other is Whaletail Pale Ale from Cisco Brewers up in Nantucket.
Oh,
Is it
yeah.
Nantucket? It's somewhere in Massachusetts, right?
Or Rhode
It's
Island?
it's that Massachusetts, Rhode Island, tri-state area, Connecticut, somewhere in there. Our Rhode Island listeners are probably yelling at the radio right now saying it's wherever, but
Yes.
it's Whaletail Pale Ale is one that I don't see it a lot in our stores, but if you travel even just a little bit north of here, you can see it pretty much everywhere. I go into New York City, well, when we have a functioning society, I go into New York City and it's at almost every bar. It's a very good beer. So pale ales, I like that, Matt. I like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Jeff, how about you? What's a trend that you are looking for from the craft beer industry?
Well, I think that it's starting already because of this last year, but I would like to see it develop further, and that's smaller batches from bigger brewers. Because what happened this year is people made the scale of beer that they are used to making, and because they couldn't ship it out to bars, a lot of it went to waste. And so I would maybe like to see some smaller runs, sort of like I'm saying with my homebrew habit, with more turnover. So you make a smaller run of beer, then you make a smaller run of another beer, and you're trying more recipes throughout the year, and it's, you know, A, it adds a little excitement because of limited availability, but B, just you get to try more things.
I love that one. I mean, we see it a little bit with with one of our favorite breweries, Trogues. They have their Scratch series, which a lot of those beers never see wide distribution. If they do can any off, they do it brewery only. And they're not, you know, your typical hype brewery. So it's not like people are flocking to them. It's more of like an opportunity to taste what they've been working on in the lab.
Yeah, Matt, but I'm even talking about like something along the lines of the Tired Hands model that our friend Francis and I have made a lot of fun of, which is they put out a lot of beers that are slight tweaks of each other and they name them something different. And Francis and I sort of think that's a little bit cheating. But I think in the beer world that we found ourselves in right now, I think that's a totally cool thing to try, you know, turn it into a series like the Scratch series. So I want sort of the distribution model of the Tired Hands. And maybe it's just the fact that we live near Tired Hands and we get to access those more often than we get to access the Scratch series. But I'd like to see something more. I'd like to see experimentation become more official, if that makes any sense.
No, I mean, it definitely makes sense. I'll take it a step further and loop it back into what I said, you know, when we first started. You know, with my trend is like you look at hop hands and they have all the different varietals of hop hands. Now they double dry hop it with different hops, and a pale ale is such like a base beer that you can actually taste distinct differences between a pale ale double dry hop with Motueka versus a pale ale double dry hop with Citra. Like there's so much room to play with and showcase a specific hop. That to me is something that I wish more breweries would do. Like you see different hop combos on the same beer. Like you're annoyed because you think that Tired Hands tweaks recipes and calls it something else. But how about if they tweak the recipe and call it the same beer just with different hops? That's kind of neat. Like that's kind of,
yeah, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Matt, is there anything, you know, we're talking about things that we hope to see. Is there anything you hope to see go away?
Yeah, I'm sure there's something I would love to see go away. I would love to see, you know, kind of tying into our last episode. I don't know if this is I don't want this to go away, but I want it to be honed in. I'm ready to move on from lactose in beers, to be perfectly frank. I don't think if you use the hops the right way, manipulate the hops the right way, I don't think it's necessary to throw lactose in a beer for whatever you're putting it in there for, whether it's to add a little sweetness to it or a little body. If you're manipulating the oats the right way, you don't, and the hops the right way, you don't need it to bring on the haziness or the mouthfeel. I would love to see lactose peace out. Now I understand milkshake IPAs are a thing, but I think I'd like to see more complex approach to the hazy IPA rather than doing more of these milkshake IPAs.
Are you talking about specifically and only in pale beers like an IPA, or like, do you want to see it thrown out of stout making too?
You know, it doesn't bother me as much with stouts because I understand the pastry stout is a thing on the rise, and I think a stout lends itself more to lactose. When I think stout, and maybe this is because the first stout I ever had was Guinness, I like the creamier feel of it. But when I'm sitting down for a stout, I'm anticipating that. But when I have an IPA, I don't need it to be creamy. I just don't. I don't need a beverage that I'm more associating with refreshing to be creamy. I just don't need it. So I would say lactose, dial it back. If it's not a milkshake IPA specifically, you know, there should not be lactose. There's one brewery I'm thinking of specifically. I'm not going to call them out, but there's one brewery that puts lactose in their IPAs a lot of the time, but they're not milkshake IPAs. They just have lactose. And I'm like, why are you doing this? It doesn't make sense. It kind of seems lazy to create a certain feel of your beer that you could create using other methods.
It's interesting that you mentioned Guinness, because Guinness doesn't have lactose in it. Guinness accomplishes that, like you're saying, without the use of lactose. A, because Guinness is most often served nitrogenated, it's on nitro, but B, because they just use the right percentage of body adding and you know, non-fermentable roasted malts. Guinness is actually classified as a dry stout, and it's really the combination of the gas and maybe some of the malts that that accomplish that. So that's a great point, Matt. The one I would like to see go away, and this is purely selfish, you're going to disagree with me, but I want to see Nelson Sauvin hops go away. I hate Nelson Sauvin hops. It's a very wine forward hop to me. And somehow it seems to be hot among the breweries that I follow. And so I every time I'm looking for a beer, it seems to have Nelson in it, and I don't like it. And I fully acknowledge that A, there's not a lot of people who can pick out Nelson, and B, people who do often like it. But my thing is, maybe it's just my personal thing, I'm going to stop buying beers that have Nelson because I've been burned too many times.
Yeah, you know, Jeff, I like Nelson Sauvin hops. But I get what you're saying there. It is an acquired taste, that hop. It's very different from most hops you have, and it's very popular right now. A lot of beers are using it, or a lot of brewers using it in their beers. So I can imagine that when you see it pop up, you're like, ah, that hop again. But I definitely get it. It's not my favorite hop. I do enjoy it. I don't enjoy it as much when it's a beer that's singularly hopped with Nelson Sauvin. I think it's a nice complimentary hop. I don't think it's the lead. I don't think it's the lead singer. I think it's like the guitar player.
I'd prefer it as the bass player. All right. With two, maybe two things ahead of it. But yeah, fair enough. I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Now, Jeff, the one trend that I'm really hoping for and actually predicting that I really wanted to share is that brewers returning to brewing simpler European styles. And there are three styles in particular that I'm really looking to see more of. And maybe I'm saying this because we're lucky to have brewers around us, you know, Forest and Main, Tired Hands, that brew a lot of these styles. Secondson, Attic, I think, does some of these. But I really want to see more table beers, milds, and bitters. And I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like, what beers in the last year have made me say, wow? You know what's made me say, wow, Jeff? I had a mild from Forest of Maine that on my birthday that my parents brought or my sister brought. And I remember drinking it and thinking, wow, that is a fantastic beer. On Thanksgiving, as crummy as my Thanksgiving was, because that's when we had COVID, that I had a table beer, a Belgian table beer from Tired Hands called Adoptive Distortion. And it made me say, wow, that those styles make me say wow more often than an IPA or a fruited sour or a pastry stout. Or even, I'm going to even say this, Jeff, even over like a really good Pilsner, they make me say wow. Because when you execute them, the sip transports me to another place. It transports me to Europe. I've never even been to England, and I feel like I'm in a pub there when I have a good mild or a good bitter. So that's what I'm really hoping for. And I actually think I'm starting to see more English milds, and you're starting to see like brown ales and like more of those styles that I'm really hoping more breweries start doing.
If I could make a prediction, I think something that we're going to see more of in 2021 is collaborations. And we did a whole episode about it, but I think especially with resources being what they have been for the last 9 months, I think people are going to need to collaborate to stay afloat. And I hope it's successful. I hope they do stay afloat. But, you know, I think people might need to pull together their resources, pull together their grains and their, and, you know, then it builds excitement and it gets people to buy beer and it exposes people to breweries they don't know about. So I think there's a lot of power in collaboration, and I think we will see more of it in 2021. And I think it's going to be a good thing for the return of the beer and hospitality industry.
Yeah, I'd imagine just like Jeff, we're excited. I'm excited to give you a big hug. You know, I'd imagine these brewer friends are excited to like actually get together and brew a beer. I mean, I know I've seen breweries that are doing Zoom collaborations and or they're rebrewing a collaboration they've already done before. You know, I think you're definitely gonna see these brewers traveling to see each other. You know, they want to see their friends, you know, they want to create. That's part of why I'd imagine brewers get into this is to work with other brewers and be friends and create. The last one that I have on my list, Jeff, and I think this actually plays into the beer I'm drinking. This was the second part that played into it. This is from a brewery called Upper Pass, which in the description of their beers, or at least on Untappd, you know, when they list the brewery, they're a nano brewery. They don't have their own space. They can elsewhere, brew and can elsewhere. In fact, I'm looking at this. Oh, this is actually brewed by Upper Pass. I don't know if they brewed this in their own spot, but I know that the double IPA that they had at the bottle shop was brewed elsewhere. I think you're going to see a lot of nano breweries popping up. I think there's probably been a lot of home brewers who've been honing their skills during this pandemic. And when everything opens up, they might be thinking, this is my time to, you know, stake my claim. This is my time to be a real thing. I think that you're going to see these, like we just got an IPA from Lucky Cat Brewing, which is a nano in Philadelphia. And I'm drinking from a nano here. I think you're going to start seeing these little guys, you know, being like, hey, I'm here. Let's get started.
You know, Matt, that's interesting because but we haven't talked about this at all yet, but right before we started recording, I was on, I don't know, CNN or Philly.com or something like that. And there was a story about a home for sale in Vermont that it's like this charming 1890s home is perfect, except for the 800 square foot addition that is a jail. It's a closed jail. And I actually saw that happen again. I think it was in like Mississippi or Alabama earlier this year. It's just like, this house is great, except for the fact that there's like, oh, you know, it's not an operating prison, but it's a still working prison. And both times I saw those properties, I thought, I'm going to go buy that. And I'm going to turn the prison into a brewery. Because it's got working plumbing. It's already, you know, it's already all concrete. It's the perfect place for a nano brewery. And then you can also just live on the space in the house part of it. The rise of nano breweries is a great prediction.
Yeah. You know, I think that'd be exciting. Like see all these guys who I mean, you might've seen more people opening breweries beforehand, but they might've been people who wanted to open beforehand and didn't because of this. I think there's going to be an influx of brewery openings in general, but I think you're going to see them be a lot smaller because I think some of that capital that some of these people might have saved up might have gone towards like living during this pandemic. So I think you're going to see them scale it back, be much smaller. And I'm hoping for that because when you bring more people into the brewing landscape, it challenges other brewers to step it up. The brewers have only already been here and already doing their thing. It challenges them to step up and it makes everyone better.
Well, if I can close this out on that note with a wild prediction, Matt, I think something that I don't know if we're going to see it this year, but I think in the next 3 years, Matt, we're going to see some elusive breweries become more available. And by that, I mean that I think that within 2 or 3 years, you and I are going to be able to go to the bottle shop. And so like these nano breweries, you know, they come in and that, you know, the rising tide, it's going to float the other boats up a little bit. I think we're going to be able to buy cans of Treehouse and of Russian River at the bottle shop. You liked a post from the Shelfie account, Shelfie Pod on Instagram. We'll get into that in the outro, but and then it showed up on my personal account because you liked it. Russian River is canning double dry hop Pliny the Elder. And I don't know where it's being sent. I don't think it's going to make it all the way to us, but I think sometime in the next 3 years, we're going to see a can of Pliny the Elder make its way all the way out to us. And I think it's even more likely that even sooner, we're going to see a can of Julius make its way to us.
Oh yeah, I think that, you know, that's kind of the name of the game now. With other breweries, local breweries stepping it up, you don't have to drive to Treehouse when you can go in your bottle shop and find something maybe not as good, but saving you the hours and hours of driving and gas. You know, that hurts breweries like Treehouse, because they rely on the out-of-state people coming and buying cases upon cases to bring back to their friends or to hoard themselves. You got to send your stuff out, because you're not going to see the same lines at Treehouse. They probably don't see the same lines that they used to see. And when I see people drinking Treehouse, I don't get as envious, because I know that I can get good beer here. Nice and local beer. So I do hope, regardless of what I just said, because I love Treehouse, if I see Julius on the shelf, I'm going to be so happy that I don't know what I'll do, but I'll buy it and I'll enjoy it and hope that it's not a mirage, or hope that it's not just a one-time thing, and hope that it continues to happen.
And when that happens, we're going to talk about it on this podcast. You can listen to Take a Shelfie wherever you get fine podcasts. While you're there downloading it, please leave us a nice review. It really helps with the promotion of the show. You can visit us on social media at Instagram and Twitter at ShelfiePod, and on Facebook.com/ShelfiePod. You can also visit us on ShelfiePod.com. That's where we post our episodes and leave the comments open. We want to have great beer discussions with all of you throughout 2021. That's another great brewer's resolution, is to talk to you guys some more. You guys, gals, and non-binary pals. We'd love to hear more from you, and we hope that you want to continue to hear from us. We'll be back with more episodes throughout the year. For now, I'm Jeff Martin.
And I'm Matt Prince.
Cheers!